Hey everybody, Norm here. Before we start today's episode of Still Untitled, I want to thank the sponsor of this week's episode. That sponsor is Blue Apron. You may have heard of this new service. It makes cooking convenient because it takes the shopping out of it, the part that I hate the most. Here's how Blue Apron works. You subscribe to meals. They have a different menu every week. And then once a week, they deliver a box to you of refrigerated ingredients. So I got a box this past Saturday with three meals in it. There's a big ice pack and all the ingredients are individually portioned and split out. And now I have recipes for three meals that I would otherwise not have cooked this week. They know that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they sell the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. For less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. And for you guys, since you guys listen to this podcast, you can get two free meals and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/untitled. Again, that's blueapron.com/untitled. Check out the menu and let me know what you think. And now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Oh, I sound very, very...
You sound a little deep today, Adam.
I do.
Did you get into it last night?
It was the talking. It was all the talking. I was at Maker Faire yesterday.
It turns out talking is hard.
Yeah. Actually, the whole weekend. The whole weekend was full of lots of loud talking. And so I found my voice kind of strained. Friday, let's see, what happened this last week? Well, Thursday and Friday, I was in L.A. working on next year's stage show.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With my collaborators. That was awesome. And that was all day Thursday, and that was a couple hours on Friday. And then Friday afternoon, we had some fun on Tested. We went to Paramount, and I hosted a Paramount Star Trek /Beyond fan event.
Ooh, I heard about it. I saw pictures.
I don't even know
this.
If there was a colon.
I don't think there is a colon.
I don't think so. Because remember, the second movie they did was just Star Trek Into Darkness. And so I think they're rolling with it to
but what was
Star Trek Beyond.
Oh, the colon's always in ST:TNG.
Yes.
Next Generation.
Yes, and DS9 and Voyager. But it was their first fan event, but also the official celebration of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
And we had a naming ceremony for Leonard Nimoy with the Nimoy family there and everything. It was fabulous. It was really, really fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Did they have a captain's chair?
Oh, they had a captain's chair.
They did.
I saw pictures.
Yeah. They did.
How did it stack up?
It was actually pretty sweet, but it did not swivel.
Well, that's probably for photo purposes.
However,
right?
it's interesting. It requires, the new captain's chair requires a very different stance. Like, It's kind of great, right? The captain's chair right here behind me, when you sit in it, you kind of find yourself accreting to certain Kirk-like poses because the chair engenders them.
You understand why Shatner did the lean on one side.
Right.
He had to keep one cheek awake at all times. So
right.
Just alternate between the sleeping
cheeks.
There's
a little bit of that, and then there's also just, there's only so many ways to sit in it because of its confines. So the new captain's chair, very similar thing. You find yourself seeing why Chris Pine sits the way he does in the captain's chair.
He doesn't spend much time in those movies sitting in the captain's chair either.
No, he totally doesn't.
Yeah. Space ergonomics. When the three of the actors, when Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, and Carl Urban went around the captain's chair for a pose, I saw Chris Pine sitting in a way that I've never seen him. He grabbed the front with his two hands and leaned forward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So that's a new Kirk pose.
So let's see. I'm trying to think about what information to cover of the event. Number one, the idea that movie stars are short, completely busted. Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, and Chris Pine are all like 6'1", 6'2".
They're all incredibly tall and handsome.
They're just ludicrously handsome and all really sweet.
Did you ask Carl Urban about the thing that we wanted to do?
What was the thing we wanted to do?
The Carl Urban Film Festival.
Oh my God, you're right. I totally forgot about that. So Carl, and it's ridiculous because you're right. We should do that. Carl Urban and I had a mutual admiration society. He was like, he said me dressing up as Jet Dredd gave him a lot of cred with his son.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I guess Katie Sackhoff is a friend. She was there. And she was also a fan. We took pictures. I was like, Starbuck. Actually, I turned to Norm and I said, was that Starbuck? This about 10 minutes before I actually walked up to her, and Norm basically did one of these. I watched him scan and go, it's not possible. He just basically was like, that can't be Starbuck. There's no reason Starbuck would be there. And then, like, I, you know, many things were happening, and then I found myself in the same foyer, and we took a picture. Best part of the picture, right behind us, it says, no pictures, no social media.
It's perfect. But I mean, that's the normal behind-the-scenes thing, right?
And she asked for the picture. Yeah, it was great.
It was great. They were. Everyone could not have been nicer. So I also interviewed J.J. Abrams and Justin Lin on stage.
So a big thing about that, because they were there to promote the movie, but I think outside of, you know, the trailer and some of the footage they showed, the big news was that Paramount is settling or dropping the lawsuit against the fan film and XR.
Oh, that's good.
So J.J. Abrams announced that at this event, and then Paramount and CBS issued a statement. What's really cool, and I think, you know, a lot of things still have to be resolved, is that they're saying that they're going to set fan film guidelines officially, which I think is the smartest thing that any owner of a franchise can do. I mean, it makes total sense for Star Trek, where, you know, they're trying to get some more relevance.
So just briefly, what do you think guidelines would be? I would think, would you want to, you can't do any currently viable characters?
So maybe their own, like, allow the, I would not think you would want to allow the fan community to expand on the universe.
Allow the universe, the Elkars, all that stuff that the standard Star Trek fare. But, like, you can't do Chekhov, you can't do Uhuru, you can do other ancillary characters. You can do characters from the shows. Like, you could choose
you
other
continue storylines
from the original series, like the, you know, smaller characters.
And understanding that it won't be canon. And, I mean, there are definitely some legal things they'll have to go through.
There's probably content guidelines. Like, they probably can't do nudity and things that would be inappropriate for the universe, like, Federation-based space racism. Or spacism.
So I was going to say, it's like, yeah, that must be shortenable. Spracism.
Spracism. You know, it's a racist. Look, I don't like those Romulans, man. I just don't like them. You can't hold that against me.
I
thought it was a fantastic event.
It was a really, really good event. It was very much fun. It was
a lot of tested members there.
I had not met any of those folks. JJ and I have a lot of different mutual acquaintances in common. It was fantastic to meet him and spend some time backstage.
Did you find out who Ray's mom and dad are?
No.
Okay. No, everyone was there for Star Trek.
Okay.
No, I mean, I'm surprised. They did an audience Q&A. No one asked about, you know, other characters or Star Wars or anything. So it was a very
47
core
minutes into Trek. The Force Awakens and none of that stuff.
No. What was really funny was that, I don't know if you saw, but during some of the segments when JJ wasn't backstage, he was actively engaged with the running of the show.
Yep.
Like, even though, you know, that wasn't his purpose there. He had scripts in hand. Like, he was doing some directing.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely, he's got the keenest eye. And, you know, the thing that I also love backstage is the actors genuinely love each other. Great friends. And great friends with JJ and Justin. Like, the camaraderie of that group was really solid.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How was Justin Lin? Like, I love the Fast and the Furious movies, and I was totally surprised when he started doing when he signed on to do a Trek movie. I mean,
He's he doesn't like talking in public very much. Mm-hmm. And the event pulled him out of the edit suite where he was locking the picture that night.
Oh boy.
Right.
Bad timing.
But at the same time, I could see from spending time with him that he doesn't like the public speaking thing, and yet he's super articulate. And the moment he's actually giving an answer, that all just goes away. He's like,
oh, that's good.
Super communicative, super articulate, super friendly. I really liked him. I just thought he was great.
Wired did a profile about him and the whole onboarding process for him to do this film and why J.J. Abrams chose him. I mean, it's, I think the fear was it was an action director, but it's really not. I mean, I think there were more parallels between the two franchises than you would think with Fast and Furious, because those characters, ensemble casts,
yeah,
lots of characters have to do lots of different things, but they all have this bond that you would hope to see in a Star Trek film.
Lastly, upon leaving the event, because the event was very long and had a party for the fans, I left the party and went to a secret gathering of nerds. In L.A.
What?
Right? So I walk in and I see my host, my friend Bill, and I say, Bill, he's like, where were you? And I said, I was hosting a Star Trek fan event. Honestly, I think the gathering of nerds, I might win. And he said, you might, except you passed Will Wheaton at the door. He's over there. And by the way, and he reached his hand around and produced LeVar Burton. He's like, at the very best, Adam, you come in third. And LeVar was like, were you at the Star Trek event? And I said, yeah. In fact,
sorry, Adam.
Several people, I don't mind coming in third to Will and LeVar. Are you kidding? I ran into several people who made it to both events. Mm. Bobak made it to our nerd event, as he should have. It was a really, really fun night. But again, talking all day. And then to the nerd party, I spent about an hour and a half there. It was loud.
Parties are hard on your voice.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Especially if you're talking a lot.
Totally.
Like, we'll talk about it later.
But then the weekend, then Maker Faire happened.
Yeah. Then Maker Faire.
Boom.
Holy cow. So this was my seventh Maker Faire, I think. That seems right, because I think I didn't go before we started Tested, probably, Norm, in 2010.
Right. I think this was my eighth.
Yeah. It's always super fun. I weaseled in and went on Friday for a little bit because I was taking my daughter for the first time.
Lovely. How did your daughter like it?
She came home on Friday night and said, Dad, I really like Maker Faire. Aww. So she got to meet R2-D2, which was pretty exciting.
So cool.
She rode in a car that looked like a cat. That was also exciting. She rode a bicycle carousel, like a merry-go-round.
Yeah.
That somebody had welded. It's really a neat idea. They welded the back posts of bicycles onto a center hub, weighted that center hub, and then welded the bike so that they always turned at like 30-degree angle.
Right.
And the kids just hop on and pedal. Mm. And that was the coolest thing she's ever done, I think.
Is that part of the bicycle-powered pavilion?
It's part of like the wacky bicycle group. Okay, cool. Right? Like I can't remember what they're called, but they do. Like, they made a bunch of nightmare bicycles where, like, the frame is on a universal joint.
Right.
So, like, the back end is going one direction and the front end is going the other.
You know, I've always heard that's impossible to ride.
I looked at people. It was basically just a big corral of people wiping out all the time and then the kid bike carousel.
Yeah, I've been very curious about I'm very curious about that specific bicycle. So, just to be clear, the stem makes the front wheel turn in the opposite direction to the direction you're turning the handlebars.
So that one, I saw more people wipe out more spectacular. Yeah, so they had, basically they geared the front handlebar. Yeah.
That sounds like the bicycle design based on the art project where people draw what they think bicycles look like in their brains.
That was super cool.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, no, this is great. They asked like 100 people or something.
Of all different ages, what do you draw a bicycle from memory? And people can't do it. Like,
really?
Most people can't, and they draw, and then...
Oh, we have to do this after
And then
this
artists, artists took their sketches and then realized them in 3D in like these beautiful models that like look like conceptual art. Oh. Yeah, you should do that.
Is that you?
I'm beeping my car.
I was like, why is that car who keeps clicking their key fob?
Okay, now it's locked. But sorry.
Your
mission.
Your daughter is three and a half.
She's perfect Maker Faire, right?
That's right. So when we talk about conventions like Comic-Con, and people always ask, when's a good age to take your kids to these shows? Comic-Con, I think, a little older, maybe six or seven.
Just to be clear, when she was a baby, I could strap her on my chest. It was perfect.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. But
strengthened her immune system.
Experiential.
All right. And it sounds like at three, she takes things away.
So three and a half, she has the endurance that she needed to, like, walk around. We ended up going 2 days because I was talking on Saturday, so we brought her back so she could see that.
Yeah.
And that was probably too much, right? Like, that second day, she spent a lot of time riding on my shoulders and not a lot of time. Like, she was just too tired to walk after running everywhere the first day.
Totally.
But for Maker Faire, she loved seeing robots. She loved seeing the dark room stuff, all of that, although it was much better on Friday when it wasn't so loud. Saturday was too loud and full of people for her to really get down and walk.
Yeah.
She loved I think they're hardware store robots. They take like wooden dowels and fittings from hardware stores and like 2 liter bottles, and they make a bunch of posable robots on one of the back alleys. She absolutely loved that. She went down and she adjusted each one. She shook hands with them. She fist bumped a bunch of them.
That's really cool.
It was really sweet. Yeah. Like and then like she's the right age to get wonder out of things. Like there's a woman that has a fairy, like a little, it's like a, I don't know if you call it a gypsy wagon, but it kind of looks like like a medieval-y kind of wagon that's pulled by a fairy. And it's all robotic. I think it's probably an electric wheelchair motor. But she absolutely loved that. She followed that around for a while and was talking to the lady who was running it and that kind of stuff.
So cool.
Like the little trains, all of that stuff. Like there was a lot of things that she was really excited about and had a lot of wonder in. And it was a super, super good time.
So, Adam, you don't get to really walk around Maker Faire. You kind of experience it peripherally, the stuff we cover, reading about blogs about it, hearing people tweet at you and showing pictures.
I also, every year until this year, have brought my kids. Thing one and thing two were always part of my arrival. I would send them off. They would head off to the Maker Shed and to go see stuff and try stuff. And then we'd have an agreement to meet back where they would always find me. They were actually my spirit animals for finding me the right lunch. They always knew among all the food trucks what I would want. And
shawarma.
So they'd bring me the amazing shawarma or a perfect hot dog.
The giant brick of curly fries, clearly.
Oh, yeah,
I got the giant brick of curly fries this year.
But this year, my boys are 17, and they both have girlfriends. They're bigger fish to fry.
That's a Saturday in the springtime. Sunday in the springtime.
Precious.
Only a few of those a year.
Opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah. So have you thought about like putting on a costume and sneaking around?
I have, except that outdoors can be really,
I guess that's true,
devilish. I actually thought about bringing the casual Rocketeer helmet. I just spoiled that for next year.
I actually saw somebody wearing a Rocketeer helmet and wondered if it might be you.
Oh, nice.
So,
Here's the other thing though, is that, I actually found this year. So every year I talk on Sunday. I know last year I missed it. I'm sorry about that. But every year I talk on Sunday around midday and then I do an autograph session. And it's the longest autograph session I ever do all year. It's 90 plus minutes. Mm-hmm. And after talking for however many hundreds of people were gathered and then signing for 90 minutes, I'm absolutely spent.
It's hard to do.
It was exhausting, and I really, like, a lot of people are like, wow, you signed autographs for 90 minutes.
You don't just sign autographs.
It's not that. It's the real interactions I'm having with everyone who comes up, because I am so impressed with the families that make it from all parts around the country to be there. The kids and their drive and their excitement. The kids are super articulate about what my show and what our stuff here means to them. Mm-hmm. So much more commentary about Tested.com and one day builds and the shop visits and specific things we've done here. It is an invigorating and amazing experience to talk to everyone, and I do talk to everyone, and that's perhaps the thing that leaves me spent.
It's hard to do. You have a minute maybe with each person, maybe two, and you try to engage with them and have an actual real conversation. It's kind of like speed dating.
It's my favorite fan event. Specifically because of the making, and because there's like the youngest kids who are into making and are fans of mine know that there's no threshold to our discussion. So they just jump right in. Oh, I'm using pop rivets. Cool. Fist bump. We're talking about pop rivets,
Man, I talked. Oh, sorry, Norm.
No, I mean, this year it was the first Maker Faire and the first time you had this type of event after the show ended. And I think there was definitely.
Oh, yeah, post Mythbusters. You're right.
In terms of listening to the Q&A, even some of the encounters I had with some of the fans, people ask way more questions about making things and about the stuff we do than the typical questions that you would hear at even at the Behind the Myths show.
Wasn't it great?
It was so great.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. You always want to, you know, you want to pivot, right? My future involves not Mythbusters, and you want people to come along because I'm a communicator and I want to talk about other stuff. And like, I'm there at Maker Faire and they're all ready to talk about other stuff. And it was really fun.
How did you come up with your talk, your topic this year?
What was your topic?
And we'll have the video up on the site in a little bit.
So the talk grew out of the AMA that I did on our Maker. I can't remember which of the Maker. Yeah, there's three of them. I know, and it's a tough one.
You did an AMA on Reddit recently.
I did an AMA on one of the Maker subreddits.
Okay.
And it was fantastic. It was a really great AMA. Specifically, I got the same question three times. What do you do when you're despondent and you hit a real wall and you're an idiot?
We talked about it last week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the traction that's the amount of spread that the podcast from last week is doing, that it's really resonating, plus the feedback I got from the AMA made me think I really want to talk about that. And that led me to thinking about why we make. And I came around to, sorry, by the way, that Reddit AMA came in the middle of a week I was having that was a really rough week.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, just as when people joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Failure takes practice, too. And we talk, you know, the secret sauce at Maker Faire is it's good for kids. But why? And the answer that I have in my head is, make nothing that you set out to make under any circumstances, and I mean making in every sense of creating, nothing that you set out to make is exactly what you intended to make. It's better or worse, and hopefully it's mostly better, but it's never what you originally intended. It always goes off the beaten path, and that is not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah.
It's how we learn, and I have quotes that I've collected over my life. I quoted Vonnegut, travel plans gone astray are dancing lessons from God. I quoted Picasso, art is not an aesthetic experience. It's a form of magic designed as a mediator between this strange, hostile world and us.
That's a good one.
And that applies, when I say art, I'm talking about someone pouring themselves into a creation. And I think that is a universal experience that writers and musicians, composers, pool players, no matter who you choose, they set out to do something. And when you're really into it, it's going to be better or smarter than you are when you're done, the thing that you make.
So I got to talk to a young man on Friday who had brought just a bunch of awesome Pepakura, like, superhero armor.
Nice.
And he was like, look, I made this out of cardboard.
Yeah.
I learned how to do it with cardboard. I was like, look, once you know how to do it with cardboard, you can do it with anything.
Bingo.
He's like, yeah, I started using foam core now. It's really a lot easier. there's two things that they did really well this year, I think. One is that they've opened up the traffic pattern so it doesn't get all you don't know about this, but there used to be these horrible choke points.
Oh, no, I was astounded by how little traffic there was getting to the event.
Well, both road traffic, they don't do on-site parking, and the shuttle buses are awesome. So if you go next year, take the buses from the off-site parking because there's loads of spaces.
Wow.
And you literally just walk right up onto a bus. As soon as that bus is full enough, they move on and there's another bus waiting. So there's always a line of buses. But inside the event, too, the places that used to get really, really congested, kind of scarily so sometimes even, they widen the paths so more people can get through and you don't have bad choke points.
Oh, that's
and
great.
They put the people who are going to get big crowds in places where it's not going to mess up foot traffic. And
as an aside on that front, I'll say I've been, you know, going for so many years. I'm always dealing with their core production crew, and it's a huge crew. The folks that put on Maker Faire are just the best. I love them so much. I can never believe how sweet and awesome and calm and gentle they are, given how many tens of thousands of people they're managing.
Oh, yeah.
They are just the most delightful people to deal with, and I always feel like this is the height of competency. That crew that runs that show, they are just on it, and they're all so super, super dedicated. It's great.
Oh, go ahead, Norman.
No, in terms of content, I also saw, like, you see trends every year. You know, there's certain years, like last year, and not every year you're going to see the big, you know, Megabots thing. Yeah. And that's an unrealistic expectation because some of these projects are, like many projects you work on, take many years to come to fruition.
Yeah.
And so they're like, you know, it's you know, peaks and valleys. This year, I saw a lot of maturity in CNC type machines and doing all sorts of things from 3D printers to engraving to laser cutting. You know, Glowforge was there. Mm-hmm. I saw CNC knitting machine that was there.
Wow.
Did you see that huge 3D printer?
I didn't see the huge 3D printer.
He didn't bring it, but it was a 4 foot by 4 foot by 4.5 foot print bed that was doing like a quarter millimeter or millimeter nozzle or something like that. You could build furniture and houses out of it.
Wow. I recently was given a dinosaur skull printed in gypsum and cyanoacrylate.
Wow.
With a resolution that I found completely
gobsmacking. Gypsum's really fine, right?
Yeah. There were no print lines on this thing, and the
more
internal
powdery
structures of the bone were perfectly done
awesome.
Transparent, you know, translucent.
You mentioned Maker Shed earlier, which is that's the building typically where you can buy kits and
they didn't have a Maker Shed.
They didn't have a Maker Shed this year. So what they did was that whole building turned into, and it shows the more maturity in the making community. It was like the place where Kickstarters were shown. Like people were
brilliant. I wish I had gone in there. I thought it was just a store. So
it was like four rows where these are either successful Kickstarters or upcoming Kickstarters, where people who make one-off or limited-run things then want to turn them into products.
Yeah.
And so
that's a great idea. Really, I didn't realize they had done that.
Oh yeah.
I did my talk on Saturday. Had a really great crowd.
Tell me about it.
Everybody came out. We talked about. I talked about how you can look at supply chain and what where people and look at the supply and demand curves and project out. I told the story of Google realizing that storage online was going to cost nothing by 2010,
right?
And building Gmail in 2003 to take advantage of that. You know, coming out with 1,000 gigs of storage when Hotmail and Yahoo were offering 2 or 4.
Yeah,
and how looking at that stuff can give you a real, it gives you the opportunity to know, like if you can cast that out to phones and say, look, there's all these components inside phones. They may be expensive when the iPhone 6 introduces it, but by 2 years later, by the time the iPhone 7 comes out, it'll be inexpensive.
That is, you know, I was reading one of those long dives into the Google modular phone
and
very, very excited.
I mean, so that stuff, that's going to make it even easier.
Yeah.
But right now, like the cost of price of accelerometers is 10 cents. And in 2007, it was $3 a chip.
Right.
If you look at what those parts are and you figure out what to build with them, then you can do really amazing things.
You know, I also, this is a subject for another podcast, but I don't think people have any idea about how much work computers are currently doing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the amount of, you know, we talked about HoloLens and you covered the HoloLens Mars experience. The amount of data processing that the HoloLens, for instance, just as a single example, is doing with 2 stereo cameras and 1 center camera, the amount of data processing it's doing would blow your mind if you're thinking about like how many computers from 2 years ago would it take to do this?
And the fact that designers and computer engineers can take that for granted to some extent allows them to design experiences completely beyond that no one would have thought was possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the other interesting thing that's happening is the cost of compute in the cloud is going way, way down.
Right.
What 3 years ago would have cost $1,000 to do now costs $15 or $10.
Amazing. Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
The
coffee.
it's the lifeblood of everything. No, thanks.
Sorry, as an aside, you know what? I got a headache yesterday because I did not have a cup of coffee in time.
That's not good.
I am not. I have never been that kind of person. I've always been a casual coffee person. But in unemployment, I'm now like part of my morning ritual is to ride up to Ritual or over to Stanza and have my cup of coffee in the morning.
There you go.
And now I'm fully coffee addicted.
Ooh. So
sorry, go ahead.
No. One person asked me a question after my talk, and I didn't have a good answer for them because he completely froze.
Yeah.
But they asked me what technologies are going to be exciting for the next 5 or 10 years. I thought it'd be a good question for us.
Yeah.
I've had a little bit of time to think about it. But the thing, one of the things that's really interesting to me is batteries. So the scale on batteries is about to get enormous because Tesla is building a factory out in Nevada that's going to basically be a multiple of current worldwide lithium ion battery production.
And totally.
And that's going to change the economics of those batteries in a way that's really interesting. Like already there was a place in Ohio or Iowa, someplace in the Midwest, they rolled out a battery buffer basically that uses lithium ion batteries to give them, buy them enough time to like spin up and spin down fossil fuel plants as needed and things like that. So it's like for the first time ever, we have storage on the grid, which is a huge deal.
And actually, if you do a, if you do any kind of dive into how you store electricity on large scales, it's a bloody nightmare.
What's your favorite?
Pumping water uphill.
I like the one where they pressurize a salt mine, a salt cave.
Oh my god!
Really? And then they put turbines. So they use the turbines as fans to blow air in during the day when solar's going.
Oh my god!
And then they let it come out at night and spin the turbines to generate.
I love they pump water uphill and let it run back downhill, and it's an energy loss of like 80% when they do it, and that's better than most things.
Well, that and the funny thing is they've been doing that since I think World War One or World War Two.
Yeah,
like the Swiss started doing that a century ago.
Technologies that are going to be really exciting. I'm still with the autonomous cars specifically because I feel like it's the kind of thing that could absolutely alter forever public transit.
And reshape our cities.
And reshape our cities. I look at a city like Atlanta, whose public transportation system is just legendarily difficult. And think, this is a problem you don't have to solve with billions of dollars and a decade and a half of engineering. You could solve it with 2,000 cars in a couple of days.
And I'm going to say modes of computer-human interaction, which is a fancy way of saying AI.
Man, I should have said VR.
Oh, see, when you say modes of computer-human interaction, I also think of the CAD-CAM pipeline being reduced to zero.
And it's exactly ways to interface with computers through voice or simplifying interfaces. I think we're finally getting to the point where those things can get streamlined.
I've been talking a lot about how virtual reality, when you have hands, gives you an interface that your brain just understands innately, because we deal with 3D worlds all the time.
Right.
And when you, you know, the difference between trying to visualize a model by looking at the three-window CAD program interface and just turning your head and looking from side to side.
It's totally...
It's amazing.
There's no competition. And the idea that we could that 3D printers are great, but you need to draw something in 3D, which is still a pain in the ass.
It's still hard.
Well, I mean, and, you know, everybody realizes this. Autodesk is working really hard on this problem. Yeah. Neil Gershenfeld is working really hard on this problem. So it's, to me, there'll be a tipping point and things will get really exciting.
Well, we've seen the first hints of this. Oculus's Medium tool, things like Tilt Brush.
Yeah.
Like they're the very beginning stages. They're the Mac Paint version of this, these tools. So,
It's, it is, this is one of the other themes I said yesterday. It has never been a better time to be a maker. And really specifically because the threshold to making is lowering and lowering and lowering. And that's vital. The last punch of my talk was these opportunities for making are not being evenly distributed. And it is up to every single one of us to help make sure that they're evenly distributed. And so we saw makerspaces in Cleveland when I was there built into a Boys and Curls Club or the public library. It's this kind of thinking that will help us saturate the whole generation of children, not just privileged children born in specific places.
Or people just living in the Bay Area.
Because
there are maker fairs all over.
Exactly. So it was a fantastic maker fair, a fantastic crowd. And then I read this long thing that described what I do on Sundays as a sermon. And it hadn't occurred to me.
I mean, it kind of is, though.
No, I know. It had never occurred to me to put it in that category. But according to this article, like, people have been talking about it as a sermon for a long time.
Well, when you... So last year, not to bring it up again, but when you were there last year, a lot of people came up and they told us, hey, we get like here in Adden, come out and get excited about making gets us cranked up for the whole year. So, you know, that last year, it's all on you, man.
Hey, you can find more of that on tested.com.
Anything on the site this week that's exciting, Norm? You're moving this
week. Yes, actually, we made the announcement last week on our other podcast. But for listeners of this podcast, if you happen to live in the Bay Area, we are moving offices. So the There's a post on the site right now, and I'll link to it in the description field in this YouTube video in this podcast, where we're doing a garage sale of our stuff this coming Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. Hang out at the old Tested office and just find our stuff and take away
May
our office chairs.
I may stop by.
Is that May 29th?
It is May 29th, I believe 1 p.m.
Do you have like a crowd control scheme set up already? Are you thinking about how you're going to manage people through this?
I don't know.
Just going to be a
everyone's
complete
gonna be nice.
Boondoggle?
Or maybe no one will show up.
Okay.
It'll be interesting, won't it?
You guys can stop telling me that Norm's going to sell the stuff that I left at the old Tested office. I went and picked it up last week, so we're all good. Thank you.
people are trying to wind you guys up.
Norm joked apparently that he was going to unload a bunch of my stuff on because I left the stuff that was mine from the set.
Sure.
And yeah, so
and it got Will to take home his
and
stuff.
And I came and got my stuff. So
awesome.
This weekend, my daughter and I took apart a lot of Lego.
Yeah.
So that'll do it for us this week.
That was a long one. That was a good one.
Yeah. See you guys next time.
See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.